May it please the court, counsel.
Do you use the same brief in every case?
Well, actually, in this case, I have been filing this brief quite a bit. This court has probably seen many of these day issues, and I think it's fairly straightforward. I have been filing almost the same brief in a lot of cases, not in the last one, however. The court in Day said the district court has the duty to set a restitution payment schedule. The district court didn't do that in this case, and we're asking that it be remanded for that somewhat limited purpose, to set a restitution schedule for Mr. Farahdin. I know that the government has raised some issues with respect to the plea agreement and to the language of the judgment.
Well, the language of the plea agreement certainly seems to be quite straightforward. It says the defendant agrees that everything is due and payable immediately and is not going to make any request for postponement. And that's exactly what you're doing now. You're saying it's not due and payable immediately. We want a postponement.
I'm not asking for a postponement. He wants
a schedule is a postponement, right?
In part.
You can you're asking for the rule that it doesn't all have to be paid right now, which is what due and payable immediately means, but it can be paid later over time. That's just
true.
A contradiction to the plea agreement.
The plea agreement, he agrees not to seek to delay payment.
Right, and that's what you're seeking.
I'm seeking for him to make specified payments, as he's actually doing now through the IFRP at the Bureau of Prisons. There's no way he's going to pay this entire restitution amount up front. And I think that that's true of certainly most of my clients, based on their financial situation. So there's going to be a payment schedule one way or another.
No, there's not going to be a payment schedule one way or another. There may not be immediate payment. But what the agreement says is, I agree it's due and payable immediately. That is, my legal obligation is to pay everything now. The argument you're making is that, no, that's not his legal obligation. His legal obligation is to pay a little now, a little later, a little, right, and so on. It's just a fundamentally different idea, right? If I take out a loan and I agree that it is due and payable immediately, that's different from taking out a loan with a monthly payment schedule.
I don't think that is what the parties contemplated, because they knew he wouldn't be able to pay immediately. He did have some assets, but not $384,000 worth of assets.
I think you're confusing ability to pay with the legal obligation to pay. The agreement is that the legal obligation will be one due and payable immediately. I can have a legal obligation to pay my mortgage tomorrow, even if I am physically unable to do it.
Sure, and then what happens if you don't do it? Someone sets a payment schedule for you, whether that's...
No.
Well...
It's not what happens.
In the mortgage, not exactly. But in the criminal case, the Bureau of Prisons sets a payment schedule. They will do it through their regulations if the district court doesn't. And that, I think, is where the issue is that the district court has then taken away or not... has delegated its duty to the Bureau of Prisons to set a payment schedule.
Well, what about that language that in the court order, Ms. Christensen, about making monthly payments of $150 commencing 30 days after the release from prison?
Well, that is what we say a partial compliance with Day, setting the payment schedule during the term of supervised release.
Right.
And that when the court does that, and if you look at the restitution statute, it refers to the fine statute, which is 3572, which says if the court's going to set a payment schedule, it must set a payment schedule during the term of imprisonment as well as supervised release.
Well, isn't it implicit in those comments that what are you saying is you don't have to make the $150 while you're in prison? Can't that be a fair reading of the way the order came down?
It could be a fair reading that the payments are to commence after he's out of prison.
Right.
It conflicts then with the checking the box of payments to begin immediately.
Right.
Because he
and
is
that,
serving.
That's the problem in terms of it being ambiguous, because this $150 a month anticipates that everything is not going to be paid immediately.
True. And the court. I don't think there's any dispute that he wasn't going to make payments immediately, and there's no dispute that he now is making monthly payments or quarterly payments through the IFRP.
Was there any thought about going back to the court to get this cleared up rather than do it by way of appeal?
Well, it's a little unclear whether how we, the court, the district court would have jurisdiction to do it.
Enforce its own order? I don't know.
I don't know if it's enforcing the order or amending the order. And amending the order after the notice of appeal has been filed, substantively, of course, amending the order after the notice of appeal has been filed, it's unclear to me that that would be appropriate. And I don't know if the Bureau of Prisons would follow it. But that's certainly not my area of expertise. So I would urge this court to remand for the limited purpose of setting a payment schedule during the term of supervised release in accordance with Day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Christians. Mr. Jacobs?
May it please the court, I'm Matt Jacobs. I'm a federal prosecutor in Milwaukee. I handle the case below as well as here. It's the government's view that the court did comply with the Mandatory Victim Restitution Act. It did set a schedule. That schedule just doesn't begin until after the defendant is released. And so that's all
that
was required.
I don't understand how the schedule after release is consistent with the plea agreement.
Right.
That's just another form of deferring liability. And the agreement says there will be no deferral.
At least says the parties won't ask for one. The judge wasn't bound by it, and the judge decided nonetheless to set a schedule that will ask for delay. And it was the government's view that this appeal was foreclosed by his agreement. We moved for summary affirmance. I know the Court of Appeals didn't think much of that. But at least it was our view that because he had agreed not to ask for delay by asking for payment schedule, that's a delay. This is not a case like Pandillo, where the court said you have to pay during incarceration. I'll leave it to the BOP to figure it out. The BOP decided to impose a payment schedule having nothing to do, independent and separate from the district court's restitution order. It has an independent regulatory authority to encourage inmates to make payments on their financial obligations. That's why it set up a payment schedule. The district court didn't delegate, didn't require the defendant to participate in the Inmate Financial Responsibility Act. If, for example, the district court had set a nominal schedule, said a dollar a month, the Bureau of Prisons can still go back. It can consider what the district court orders for restitution, but under the Inmate Financial Responsibility Act, that's just one of the considerations. It's free to make its own independent determination of payments. The schedule complies with 3664F2, and because the Bureau of Prisons wasn't delegated the authority from the district court, this isn't plain error. It's the government's view it's not error, but it's not plain error. It's one of those errors that, if there is an error, doesn't need to be corrected. The defendant is making $25 a month payments under the Inmate Financial Responsibility Act, and when he gets out, he'll make payments under the schedule that the district court set.
What's the age of this defendant?
I'm gonna have to guess, but my recollection is he's younger than me, so I'll say he's 40. He's got 2.5 years with 15% off. You know,
did the government recommend $1,800 a year as restitution?
No.
What's $150 a month?
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't recall taking a position as the actual amount of restitution that should be ordered.
The judge just made this up himself based on his assessment of his financial capacity or earning capacity?
Right, based on the PSR. And if there are no other questions, Your Honors, that's all I have.
Do you have any comment?
I'll make a few brief comments. As far as the Pandiello case, where the judge did specifically delegate to the IFRP, that is done in some cases, but it's rare, and it was not done in the Day case, but found that this was a delegation because we're, and in the absence of the court order, the BOP steps in. Their regulations require the defendant to follow their schedule in the absence of a court order. And failure to follow that schedule results in, as I've delineated in the brief, some pretty significant consequences for an inmate. And the second point is that the BOP can't simply ignore the district court's order and should not be able to ignore, well, whatever the district court thinks, it's the district court's statutory duty. The BOP just has federal regulations regarding it. Unless there are further questions, I'll ask for the remand.
Thanks to both counsel.
Thank you.
Case is taken under advisement.